Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams
and Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 451. And tonight, we are talking about three things. We're going to talk about Beastars, the second to last episode. We're going to talk about another episode of Season 3, Star Trek Lower Decks. But first, we're going to talk about WonderCon!
Woo! Did you go to all 4 days, or were there... How many days did it run?
It's 3 days. I had an extra day where I was up in Los Angeles the Thursday beforehand because I have to go into the office once a month. So I figured if I'm going to be taking the train up in that direction anyway. So I took the train up Thursday morning, was in the office. Then I took a train to Anaheim, stayed in my little hole-in-the-wall place, the Harbor Motel, Thursday night, and then went over to the convention center area the next day to share a room with Jada over at Portofino.
So
that's our usual schedule. So yes, and Harbor Motel was, I mean, I enjoyed it just because it's like a little home away from home. It's just a tiny little space. You know, I just basically watched some Netflix and had dinner and drank some beer. But when I say low frills, I think it's getting a little ridiculous. I had one bar of soap and one towel in the whole room. They didn't even give me a bath mat. There's not a Kleenex to be found in that entire place. I mean,
wow, comebacks.
Yeah, yeah, but it's, I mean, it's very clean. They've taken out all their carpets, which I think more hotels should do, that whole worry about like bed bugs and everything. Just take out the carpets, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was fine, but Portofino is definitely nicer. And WonderCon was very nice. We didn't get dumped on with rain like we did previous years. I thought the cosplay was excellent. The sales floor, God, Artist Alley, just there's so much pretty stuff. And things of, I mean, if you want to spend a lot of money, you can. There's plenty of people who are selling like little $10 prints or $5 postcards or $3 stickers. So you can just go and support lots of artists for not a lot of money. And it's really, I like it. I had a good vibe this year, I thought.
And I'm really enjoying the pictures that you've been posting. And my favorites, well, I mean, Arcane, that's obviously one of my favorites. And the one that you found of Rutherford and Tendi from Star Trek Lower Decks, that was great. But my other favorites are the group ones that they do, like all DC characters. I saw one you posted today. It was all Spider-Man characters, and there was even somebody like lying down in front that had looks like Tevas on. I'm like, that's got to be from a Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
I'm sure. I'm absolutely positive. Yeah, they have some great meetups.
And there was one where it was just a whole bunch of Mandalorians in the background, and they were all jumping up and down in sync. It was just random.
It was so. They had this huge Star Wars meetup, and there is a guy, he goes by Chief Geek Photography because he was actually a chief in the military, and he organizes the Star Wars meetup, and he organized the Black Cosplayers meetup, and he's super enthusiastic and super fun. And this Star Wars meetup was just absolutely huge. If you look at the picture, there's so many people in it. And at one point, we're waiting to get going. They're trying to let, you know, give enough time for everybody to show up and everything. And there's a whole bunch of Mandalorians in the back, and I sort of zoomed in on them, and they were all just bobbing up and down together, and everybody was laughing. It was just, it was really, like I said, super good vibe. And then later that day, it was the Black Cosplayer meetup, and he was running it again, you know, Chief Geek Photography. But at one point he said something like, okay, so it's our people and there are folks that are late. So we're going to wait a little while because that's apparently Black people time is even Black people say that is definitely a thing. so they killed time by just dancing. And it was just so joyful. It was really just pretty amazing.
Man.
Yeah, just a celebration of Black cosplayers. It was absolutely just heartwarming, you know, really, really cool and very, very cool stuff.
I think Nathan and I have got to get up there for WonderCon again because I love me some San Diego Comic-Con, but WonderCon felt like, I don't know, a little less pressure, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. You don't have the Hollywood aspect. There isn't, I mean, I'm sure there's probably some panels that get kind of full up, but you do not have anything like Hall H going on there. Cause Hall H is where you get, you know, like Robert Downey Jr. is not going to WonderCon. Now, WonderCon isn't cool, but he's not going to that one. So it's more a celebration of artists and crafters and people just talking about changes in the industry. So it's, way smaller, never really super packed, and you can probably buy a ticket almost up to the weekend, honestly.
Ooh,
I don't know how often they sell out.
Man.
Yeah. But it's, it was a good year. It was very fun. And at one point, I was Friday. Now, I had worked all day Thursday. I'd gotten up super early on Thursday and slept in late on Friday and was walking around the convention because Jada didn't get there till later. And halfway through the afternoon, I started just like failing fast. I was like, oh God, I'm so tired. I'm just going to sit down in the anime room and watch some anime. I don't don't even know what was the first anime that they played because I was literally falling asleep during it. Doing that thing where your head is just like dropping. You're like, but then the next one that played was Cowboy Bebop, which I've never watched Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, Cowboy Bebop is awesome. Nathan and I watched the whole series. It's just so, I don't know. I can't. So much about it is indescribable, I think, the attitudes and that, like, there's an entire episode where there's a mad bomber that he keeps trying to deliver his manifesto and no one will listen to him. Kind of thing happening. And it's just like, it seems like a guy who honestly thinks that there's awful things in the world and has an idea for how to change it. And he really wants to reach people's hearts and minds and no one ever hears his speech.
Oh my goodness. The one they did had a lot of scenes in a church. I thought the music was really good. The main character, there's something about a guy who, I guess he had maybe once been partners with, and it was kind of like close enough to be brothers. End of the episode, he ends up like completely bandaged up head to foot, and the main character, who's a woman, is the one who actually got him saved, and she's sort of singing while he's kind of like recuperating, and he calls her over, and you think it's going to be this tender moment, and he whispers at her, tone deaf, and she just, the next scene, you see the other guy watching as she walks out of the room, but she's doing this really exaggerated stomp, stomp, stomp. It was very, really funny. Super, super fun. The anime rooms are always a good time.
Yeah. Greg at How to Drink is a huge Cowboy Bebop fan, and he's done at least one episode of Cowboy Bebop Drinks, so I would recommend that one.
I think one of the biggest things that happened at Comic-Con, though, I was over at the minifig table, where they have a really great system. They have all their minifigs on display, and they have a number under each one and all these pads of paper, and you write down the numbers of the ones that you want, and they hand you these Ziploc bags because they were having a problem during COVID because everybody's touching stuff and everything, and this is a way everything's very sanitary and cool and everything. I'm waiting for Jada and Ahmed to pick the ones they want, and I look over and I was like, is that, holy shit, it's the TV face Titan from Skibidi Toilet. I first sighting of Skibidi Toilet merchandise in the wild. It has broke containment. I could not believe it. It was amazing.
And I think you would mention that, and it made me wonder, when was the last time we got a new episode of Skibidi Toilet?
It's been a while. It's been like a few months, honestly, I think.
And I heard that Michael Bay was going to be maybe doing the movie for Skibidi Toilet, which of course means there's going to be a bunch of human characters running around, and the Skibidi Toilets are just going to be background noise.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that that's not like something that he's dealing with, or that he's like being told, well, you can't release any more stories because now we've optioned all of it. Just, I don't know how Hollywood works.
No, me neither. I will say that if you look around, there is a Skibidi Toilet movie trailer, but apparently it's all AI generated. It had like John Goodman in there, and I think they said Snyder was directing. It's not a thing. It's not a real trailer. It's not, and it's not even really good AI video. So it's, which made me relieved because it was just like, all people. I'm just like, oh God, where are the Skibidi Toilets? Oh my God.
God, what is it? Michael Bay makes a Transformers movie and the emphasis is on the humans. And Michael Bay makes a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and the emphasis on the humans. Just, it's going to be humans and explosions, whatever you want.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, explosions, like honestly, the Skibidi Toilet has some great explosions in that series.
It really does.
You would want an explosion expert to do it, but it's gotta focus on the not humans. It really does.
Well, I mean, it's just the fact that we've got weird heads in toilets. The movie is going to have to embrace that, or it's not going to work.
No, absolutely. But yeah, that's all for WonderCon. We already have, as time of this recording, 4 galleries up in the site. We're going to have at least 4 more, including not just cosplay, but one gallery full of toys and another gallery full of dogs, because there were so many service animals there this weekend. I started asking people to take pictures of their dogs, and everybody was very happy to let me.
Aww, so that's adorable.
You want to see some puppies, then you should definitely check it out. Okay, so now we are going to jump straight into the second to last episode of Beastars.
And if I'm remembering right, it starts with Louis going to the scientist that he was supposed to meet. And yes, it is the civet cat. And he shows him the sample of kinds, and the civet cat doctor starts testing things and finds out that it doesn't do anything to like regular carnivore blood, but if somebody has eaten meat, it will stay in their system. It somehow binds to the molecules. I asked Nathan, do you suppose any of this is real science? And he said, probably not.
Yeah, I doubt it. Yeah.
And Louis is just like, we've got to let people know. And he had been pretending to be somebody else. But the Civic Cat saw through that. And he doesn't really want to tell anybody. He was like, but I mean, eating meat is illegal. So therefore, this can't be a problem, can it? And I cannot get a read on this character because he's like doing all this flamboyant dancing motion as he's talking and just being really like enunciating his words really carefully and obviously a little unhinged. And I don't know if this is something that maybe he put in motion with this idea that this will force people to deal with the meat problem, or if he doesn't care and this is just like a really interesting thing that's happening for him.
I lean towards the latter. I mean, as a civet cat, he is a carnivore himself, right?
Maybe. I don't really know what the... I mean, obviously the civet cats eat coffee beans because they poo them out and then people make coffee out of them. I don't know who first thought that was a good idea.
I have no idea. I really liked how he phrased it, though, because Louis is just appalled that he would not want to do anything about this kinds thing. And the quote is, so you'll turn a blind eye to eating meat, but you won't tolerate kinds? In my notes, he has a point.
Right.
I mean, that is a really excellent point. If you're going to outlaw kinds, but you recognize the fact that it only works on people who are eating meat, that's a problem.
Yeah, it is, actually. And I mean, I was thinking, but, you know, with kinds, it's causing people to hurt other people. I'm like, oh, I'm sure eating people is also causing problems.
Mm-hmm. Also made me wonder, you know, technically, Louis has eaten meat. He couldn't really keep it down. But when he was with the Shishigumi, he demonstrated that he would eat meat. Do you suppose the kinds could have an effect on him?
It depends on how long whatever it is stays in the system. Because I think they've mentioned a few times, like, a carnivore who has recently eaten meat. So it might not be that long lasting.
Right. But the Civic Cat is also actively researching mixes, and he was asking Louis about melon, what he's like. And at one point, Louis realizes that melon is this incredibly slight and kind of delicate build, and yet the Shishigumi will not stand up to him at all. And so he kind of wonders about, you know, what exactly makes melon so powerful. The Civic Cat says that he thinks mixes have heightened senses, possibly. So I don't know.
We have a brief scene with Legoshi at his the noodle shop where he works, and he's apologizing to his boss. I liked how they had his boss react, because his boss wasn't being all, oh, no, it's perfectly fine. And he also wasn't being a hard ass, but he was just like, have some noodles. You look like you need it. If you need some time off, you can do that, but you can't just not show up for work. And it's just, you know, it's kind of the boss that you want to have. They're not going to let people get away with shit, but he's also not going to be an ass about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The next scene is Legoshi goes to talk to the B-Star, and the B-Star thinks he made a mistake bringing Legoshi in, and it wasn't a good idea. And the thing is, Legoshi absolutely refuses to leave the investigation, and he wants to talk to Melon one more time.
So he snags something, which I think is something belonging to one of the dancers, maybe? I can't, because he's like smelling it and he's walking into where the dancers worked. I guess he's trying to track them down, or maybe it was Melon's mask that he had that he's trying to track him down by smell.
Yes, you're right. That's exactly what it is. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
So he goes into the strip club, and there's the owner of the strip club, and his tail has been cut off. So that was what Melon was eating, not a penis.
Oh, I've got in my notes, I am so glad it wasn't a penis. With this show, you never know.
You really don't. No, weird things happen. And the owner doesn't want to talk to him because he's lost his best dancers, and they've just up and left, which, they're probably right ahead of the Shishigumi and Melon. But I can't remember what it is that Legoshi does that makes the owner, like, actually give him some information. What is it that...
Again, it's funny because my notes jump over that too, but there was something that Legoshi said that I think made the boss realize that he was being sincere. And so he does tell Legoshi that Cosmo had seen a pattern underneath Melon's shirt. So that's a way to identify him, I suppose.
And then we see Melon, and he's going to a tattoo parlor, and they're cleaning up after a mess because apparently the tattooist accidentally killed somebody. And that is just like, it's something that apparently has happened enough that they don't really think it's weird anymore. And he says, I'd fire him, but he keeps showing up. Oh. And Melon goes in, and after pulling a gun on him, which causes no reaction because it's a sloth, is the tattooist. And he just talks very, very slowly. And Melon lies down for a tattoo, and it's very, very bloody. And apparently this sloth works really slowly enough for there to be an awful lot of bleeding.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently he's just not fast enough to realize that his subjects are bleeding out. But Melon loves this because he can't really taste anything, and he just, his sensations are just off and everything. But he says pain is the only thing that makes me feel alive. And it's just, he like takes off his shirt, and he has, I don't know, little patterns under, you know, like the patterns, like spots, I guess.
Leopard, I think. Leopard. It is.
Yeah, exactly. So he's covering them over with like leaves, and he tells this,
melon leaves.
Yeah, he tells the sloth, cultivate my melon field for me. And I'm like, oh, come on. We don't, it's not anywhere even close to subtext at this point.
No, and of course he's writhing all over the place. And I just turned Nathan, man. The Japanese are so weird.
God, they're really, really, really weird. But yes, so Melon is absolutely into pain. Like right. 100%.
Yep. So, which would be another reason. Reason why the Shishigumi probably can't stand up to him, because if they tried to attack him, he'd like it.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, I had this in my notes as happening before this, but it's possible I got my notes out of order. Legoshi's hanging out in the hot tub, and he's kind of relaxing, and I don't know, he's enjoying himself, and his seal friend is there, and his seal friend absolutely loves the hot tub. He didn't like it at first, but he likes it now because he likes going with Legoshi because everybody's naked. And it's just this whole scene, again, is very homoerotic in a very, very big way.
But his seal friend is another one of those that they always have the A-team animators.
Yes,
and he was,
yes.
Especially on his face. And he teaches Legoshi to like, if he needs to call for help, if he's out in the ocean, and it teaches him the words, and you go under the water, and it says, like, ba, 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 and you wouldn't think that was all that endearing, but it really is. But
yeah,
they go out to a food stand that's selling meat openly, which Legoshi is just like, wait, you can't do that. And it's seafood. It's like, you know, tentacles with suckers on them, everything, which the seal really, really likes. And he's like, you've just got to accept that in the ocean, everybody eats everybody else. And it's like, it is such a Pollyannish attitude that this guy has that I don't know how that works in real life. Because you can say everybody's okay with eating everybody else, but how do you go through your day knowing that, like, you could get eaten, or you could come home and find out that your spouse got eaten? And it's like, it's perfectly fine.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I did think about the fact that, are there herbivores in the ocean? Are there any fish creatures that will only ever eat plants?
I remember from reading Rudyard Kipling's Just So Strange. No, it was the one about the white seal.
Yeah.
And when he found the manatees that were the only ones that were able to guide him to some place where hunters wouldn't go. And yes, they were only plant eaters. So yeah, I think there are. I'm fairly sure, there's a lot of sea creatures that only eat plants.
Okay, because we knew that whole, like, oh, you know, everybody should eat everybody else and everything. It's like, that wouldn't work on the land because a mouse is not really going to chow down on a lion. That's not how any of that works. But in the sea, I guess it's more likely that things will eat each other. You know, a shark will eat a bunch of fish, but fish will chow down on a shark. So maybe that makes a little more sense. Whatever. But I liked how he had ordered the octopus, and Legoshi was pointing out that that was actually, you know, you're not supposed to do that. It's illegal. And he gives this whole thing about, oh, you know, this is how it works in the ocean and everything. But then he turns to the goat seller of it, and in this very ominous tone, is like, poaching is a crime. And the goat is just like, well, wait, you said you liked it. So yeah, he knows it's illegal, and he knows the goat shouldn't be doing it, but he still eats it anyway.
Yeah,
so I don't know. And that's the only other thing to happen in the whole episode, is that Legoshi does manage to track down Melon using his scent, but the episode ends before we actually have a meeting between the two of them, I think.
Right, yeah. So, okay, one more episode, and we've got to resolve this whole kinds thing, and we've got stuff like Juno being in love with Louis, and Haru being in love with Legoshi, or vice versa, and the melon thing, and the all of this stuff. One more episode? Really?
Yeah, I know. I have a feeling we're going to have some dangling plot lines. I don't know. So I didn't hear a lot of uproar when the series ended, but I didn't necessarily hear everybody going, oh my God, it was the best ending ever. I think I'm prepared for it to be fine.
Okay. You know? Yeah. All right. I guess we'll find out.
Yes, we will. Okay. Now, you watched another episode of Star Trek Lower Decks, but I did not. So you're going to have to take the recap on this one.
Okay. It was the episode where they visit Deep Space Nine.
Yay!
That was so much fun. I mean, the Nana Visitor, like, I don't know a lot of actors' names a lot of times, but I memorized her name from when we were watching Deep Space Nine. So she was a guest star, and that was awesome.
Yeah. But yes, it's just she was.
So it's Boimler and Tendi and Rutherford go to the promenade because they're just thrilled about getting to see the original Quarks, which apparently Quark has like opened a whole bunch of franchises in the Alpha Quadrant.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's this whole thing, like, you know, he serves the best cocktails and the best food. And they're like, can't you just replicate anything? He's like, well, I've got my special replicator, the Quark 2000, which I programmed myself. So it's got that X or something. And you're like, this is going to come up later.
Sure.
But Boimler goes gambling and is like winning stacks of platinum, and that's pretty much all he does for the episode. But Tendi and Rutherford get glommed on by this Starfleet dude who's also an Orion, and he's thrilled that he's found Tendi, another Orion, and he is just talking himself up and talking up the whole pirate nature of the Orions and how great it is to steal things, and he's got this special Orion tool that's for lockpicking and everything else, and kind of slagging on Tendi a little bit when she's embarrassed because she's like, not everybody is a pirate and this is embarrassing, and she cannot get him to settle down. Ugh. So meanwhile, the captain and the first officers have been roped into doing this negotiation with other aliens from the Alpha Quadrant, I think, to like set up trading and something like that. And they're very difficult. But she seems to be doing very well until they spot Quark. And Quark is pissed off because apparently this alien race didn't help much in the Dominion War. And he's kind of holding it against them and he'd like them to leave. And the captain is like, you know, trying to keep the aliens there. Like, he's got so many business opportunities in the Alpha Quadrant. You really need to see how he's making such a good business opportunity. And then they spot the Quark 2000 and they're furious and they kidnap Quark and they drag him to the ship. And meanwhile, Tendi and Rutherford and the other Orion are on the ship. So they're getting kidnapped to the Alpha Quadrant by accident. Ugh. And then Rutherford suggests to the dude that you are a pirate, you can take over the ship. And then it turns out he's not a pirate.
Because of course he isn't.
He's an Orion that was adopted and he grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. So, and he learned everything he knows about Orions from Orion romance novels. And he said it's the bad ones with all the boobs on the covers. And he's apologizing to Tendi and she understands that it's really hard to know where you fit in all of this, and that she's sure that the real him is actually a great guy. And then he's like, but if we really had some pirate skills, we could get out of here. And Tendi says, yes, we could. And then Tendi friggin' kicks ass and single-handedly takes over the ship. And
yes!
It is so awesome.
It is so cool.
she's like snatching that tool that he had and knocking down guards and pulling out a latinum teeth so that she could use it to reprogram the computer elsewhere, and throws the thing at a control panel to make it open up. And the guy's like, whoa, you just did that with a wine bottle opener. And then they get on board the ship and she is just in full rage mode and goes rah like that, and the alien staffing the control panel just dives over a balcony. He's so terrified. I'm like, I had to watch it 3 times. That was so cool.
That's so amazing.
So apparently her parents are pirates. They're with like the syndicate, I think, and they taught her everything they know, and she said, oh god, my parents would be so proud of me right now. So it's not something she wants to do, but boy, is she good at it.
She can do it when she has to.
She stops the ship from going through the wormhole just long enough for the Cerritos to get a tractor beam on them and pull them back. Now, the power had been out because the aliens had thrown some kind of, I don't know, EMP thing, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in all of this happening, what Mariner has been doing is her girlfriend, Jennifer, the Andorian, and yes, they are dating, they have made that very clear, wants her to meet her friends. And they have this salon, which is them basically hanging out in pajamas and making their own candles and doing spoken word things like that. And they are really kind of judgy of Mariner because she's not into it at all and she doesn't want to get up and perform everything. And then when the power goes out and all these candles are burning and it's burning up the oxygen because there's no air circulating, and they all start freaking out. And Mariner's trying to get them to calm down. And Jennifer's like, why are you being so nice? This isn't you. Why don't you just order them around? And Mariner's like, but I thought you wanted to be nice to everybody. And she's like, I like the fact that you're bossy. So that's what Mariner does. She takes control and she phasers all of them unconscious because they they use up less oxygen when they're unconscious. And everybody's screaming and running around and she's firing. And Jennifer is just standing there clapping her hands and cheering. Oh my God.
It's so cute.
It is adorable. And then when everybody's unconscious and Jennifer says, this is what I love about you. You never expect what's going to happen with you. Because Mariner's like, I didn't expect phasering all of your friends at your friends get together tonight. And then Jennifer says, but you and me being the only people who are still conscious is a bad look. And Mariner's like, I get that. So, and then they kiss and then she's like self phasers both of them and they collapse on the ground in each other's arms. And it's so cute.
It is adorable. It was the cutest kiss ever. It was just, I have that mental image of that one moment. It was really, really sweet.
All right, try to wrap up the episode really fast. When they get the aliens back aboard the ship, it turns out the reason why they were mad was because Quark had stolen some of their technology in order to make the Quark 2000, and they weren't kidnapping him, they were arresting him. And the captain says, I've got a solution that'll make everybody happy. Well, it turns out the solution is that they don't arrest Quark, and he gives them 76% of all of his profits from all of his franchises. And he's like, I thought you said this would make both of us happy. And she's like, well, wouldn't you be happier poor instead of arrested? And Quark's like, no!
She clearly doesn't get Quark at all.
She doesn't. Oh, and Boimler is still winning at the Latinum, and the little Ferengi flunky who's been trying to like figure out if he's been cheating says, oh, you could take all that filthy, germy Latinum home, or you can take this coupon for twice off on anything in the Quark's gift store. And Boimler's like, ooh, Quark bucks, great. We don't even use Latinum in Starfleet. And the guy's like, really? So when you've switched to Mariner and Jennifer talking at a table, and you see just like blurring out of sight is Boimler walking past holding his Quark bucks, and he looks so pleased. And I just,
he does.
It's great that he's not hapless all the time. He actually knows what he's doing and he knows what he wants and he's happy with that.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Yeah. And this is the part where I had a little bit of a problem because Mariner and Jennifer are talking and she's like, well, I'm really sorry that everything didn't work out. And Jennifer says, oh, it's great. Now all of my friends are scared of you. And you can see them over on the table and they're cowering. And I'm like, okay. So they were shitty to Mariner and Mariner phasered all of them while Jennifer cheered. Why would she still be friends with people who are shitty to her girlfriend? Why would her friends still be friends with her when they got terrorized and she thought it was funny? I mean, it's like both of those things kind of cross a fucking line. I don't understand the dynamics here. I'm not sure why the friendship still continues unless it's a small ship and everybody has to be friends with each other. It's just weird. It's literally my only problem with the episode.
Right. I got the idea that she wasn't really going to be friends with them anymore. I thought that she had just kind of been acquaintance with them just because of, like you said, it's, you know, it's the ship that you're on all the time. You got to hang out with somebody. And I feel like maybe she was just kind of done with them because they were kind of shitty and everything. So, but yeah, I don't know. I remember that moment too. It didn't bother me as much because I was like, oh yeah, they're not really friends anymore.
I would hope not. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it for the episode. Mm. It was just so fun to see Tendi just go after everybody in full pirate mode.
I just loved it. And she's, because she is so sweet and so nice and so, you know, kind of like uncertain a lot of the times, you just didn't expect it. And I love that trope, you know, when the really quiet, shy person ends up being a complete badass.
Because they did that in another episode when they actually visited, I think, an Orion outpost or something. And she was all dressed up in gear and met somebody that she knew. And, you know, he was happy to see her, but he was like, oh, wait a minute, are you even supposed to be here? And she just like slaps him down like full pirate queen mode. And he's sitting there literally kissing her boots. So I'm like, oh, I like this. This is a great sign attendee.
Yeah, it is. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. Woo! Like I said, we've got 4 up so far. Going to be another 4 coming from there. I don't know. You know, I don't think Leland was taking photos this time, but if he did and he sends us some, we will post those as well. He also, as a thank you for, I've done some graphic design work for him. He gave me a bag full of graphic novels that he thought that I would like. So I have some reading to do.
Yay!
So all that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So we do have a Night Vale episode is going to drop tomorrow. So next week we'll do a recap of that. We got one more episode of Beastars.
One more.
And, you know, who knows how many more episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 450. Hang on, cat bumped the mic. Sorry. Try that again.